What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Connect podcast. My name is Gali, and I hope that you guys are doing really, really well. I want to say an Eid Mubarak to everyone who is celebrating, and I want to wish you guys a great midweek. This week's episode, I'm joined by V Kimani, who is actually the first person that I did a podcast with. I think almost 2 years ago at this point, and I just love when like you go full circle. And V is a very interesting individual. How we met is interesting. What she does is interesting. And I can't wait to get into all of those little tidbits and cool stories. So I just want to say welcome, V.
Thank you. First of all, Eid Mubarak.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm actually just enjoying a cup of matcha tea, my new fave.
Nice.
Feeling good. The weather's been lovely in London, so kind of just enjoying that from the inside. yeah.
I've been seeing all of the great weather and everyone enjoying themselves outside, which I don't know if that's actually a good idea, but...
So my friends were like, come over to the park on Sunday. And I was like, I'm sorry, I'm not ready yet. I'll just watch you from the inside for a minute.
Yeah, I totally get you. I'm doing all right. It's been a very spiritually rejuvenating month. It's just been nice to sort of be away from pandemic news and to be focusing on something completely different. And something that's really fulfilling. Yeah, so I feel a lot more grounded now than I did a month ago. So how do you ground yourself and practice self-care during times of uncertainty?
Ooh, that's a good question. I have a list in my head, so I'm going to start like going through that. But the first thing that came to mind is prayer. Like you, I would imagine, also do the same. I pray a lot, and that sort of grounds me and like gets me feeling connected spiritually, mentally, emotionally. Something else I do is I try and meditate. I haven't been as consistent as would be best, I think. But it's something that whenever I just take 5 minutes, and meditation for me can also look like prayer or like drinking a cup of hot tea and like just observing my thoughts, not judging them. So I do that sometimes. And something else that grounds me is calling loved ones. So that's always a good idea, you know, like you leave feeling more aware of yourself and like reminded of who you are, especially my mom. That always happens after we speak. So yeah, I'm really grateful for that, and for my good friends, and for you, Kali. Yeah, what else do I do? I love dancing as well. I feel like when I move my body, it sort of connects me to the ground and like just grounds me in a very physical way, and I can feel my feet on the ground, and it brings me joy. Also, of course, listening to music. And self-care practices as simple as wearing a face mask to, you know, lift my spirits, but also self-care in the sense that I practice more of like an internal self-care, where it's how are you feeling, why are you feeling this way, why are you feeling stressed out, why are you angry, what's this emotion, you know. So I try and process these different feelings, and then of course I can also enjoy self-care that can be more like doing a face mask, getting a massage, but I can't get that done now. But yeah, little things like that. That was a long answer.
No, that wasn't a long answer at all. You're fine. No, I actually really relate to that. I think that personally, of course, prayer is something that is a very integral part of my life, religion as a whole, and definitely like talking to loved ones. I think that a dance party is always a good idea, even if there aren't like many people. It could be a solo dance party. When it comes to like religion and faith and spirituality, is that something that was cultivated throughout your life? Or is it something that you began practicing more the older that you got?
Yeah, okay. So I've had this question asked a couple of times in the last week, which is really interesting. And I want to say that I grew up going to church every Sunday. So in my house, in my mom's house, it was compulsory. You know, if you're going out with friends the night before, whatever you're doing, it's fine, as long as you make it to church at 9:30 every Sunday morning. So I grew up with that, and we would have like a culture of going to church in the morning, then going out for lunch, and then, yeah, so that was like every Sunday routine. So I grew up with that, but I'd like to say that I only found it again for myself maybe a couple of years back, where I was doing it out of my own like will. So when we got a bit older, my mom sort of stopped making it compulsory. We could choose if we want to go or not. But yeah, I moved to England, I went to uni, and I found myself just drawn back to religion, to the church, to the community, and just like this spiritual fulfillment that brought.
And that's actually quite interesting. Because I think that personally I've had a similar journey where like religion's always been a part of my life, but like the older that I've gotten, the closer my relationship to God has become. And that's because like I'm really investing more time and pushing myself to understand more and learn more and to connect with God in that way. But I also sometimes wonder what religion does for different people, you know, like I know for me it basically is sort of like the foundation and, you know, structural beams to my life. But what role does religion play in your life, and what does it do for you?
That's a really good question. I feel like religion has created community for me to start with, in a more like social aspect. Being in London can be a little isolated, and so it's really nice that you have a sense of community, and I find that with my church. More like spiritually and emotionally, it just gives me hope, religion, and like reminds me that God is with us and we shouldn't be afraid, you know. So especially in these times of turmoil, it's been really important to me getting online, and my church does like daily devotionals. So I just get some motivation and like some words of wisdom, some encouragement. And then frequently my mom would call me and be like, please try read this Bible verse. It's beautiful. And I always appreciate that. So yeah, sense of community, sense of grounding, a lot of hope, and just gratitude. I'm reminded to be really grateful, even just for the smallest things, like having a relationship with God. That's a huge thing, but something that you might overlook, you know? Yeah, so that's what religion does for me.
Yeah, I completely understand that. I think that gratitude especially, I think that it always sets up great perspective when you're able to give thanks for what you have and realize that, you know, because a lot of the time we get very caught up in like the fast life or how busy we are and the things that we're doing and just like worldly things, that it's very easy to sort of lose perspective on, you know, the quote unquote bigger picture and like, you know, matters to do with like your soul and your heart and your emotions and really like looking inward and getting that sort of balance in your life. And so, yeah, for sure, I understand when you say gratitude, because I think that that's also something that faith has brought me, is being grateful for where I am. And that also sort of gives me contentment. I always say that, like, I would much rather be content than be happy, because, like, happiness and sadness can come and go. But, like, gratitude cultivates contentment, which I think is really, really important. And you, of course, have a podcast, the At the Table podcast, which we'll get into in a moment. But it very much like centers wellness and self-care and women. And it's always really interesting to hear like the different stories and different people's journeys on there. But I wonder, were there any moments in your life that sort of pushed you to prioritize self-care and wellness in your own life, and made you sort of rethink your lifestyle, like certain things that you're going through, and you're just like, you know what, I need to give myself time and I need to focus on my well-being?
I would say starting this podcast was as a result of me finding the need to, you know, focus more on my self-care. It became like a matter of like survival, really. And I remember this was the time that I was doing my first master's, like an MBA in, no, an MA in gender studies, right? And it was incredibly intense and it really shook my world and like affected my mental health to some extent. So I found the need to like practice self-care more of like a political thing as well. Like, you need to practice self-care, especially as a Black woman, for survival, you know, especially when you're in academia or really involved in like such institutions. So yeah, that's how I began with my self-care.
I had a
practice.
Very difficult final year of my bachelor's degree, which sort of led into a lot of like anxiety and depression. And I almost failed out of university when I was doing my bachelor's. So basically, I was in such a dark place that not only did that sort of strengthen my relationship with God, but it also sort of helped me realize the importance of valuing, you know, my own well-being and my own mental health and things like that. And that's why, like, from then on out, that was like 2014. So now 6 years later, oh goodness, it's really been 6 years. But 6 years later, that is something that I would say is one of my biggest learning lessons. So if something doesn't sort of, if it doesn't gel well with like my sanity, it's very easy for me to sort of walk away from it. Like, I don't look back at all.
That's incredible.
And it's incredibly important. And I hope that more people sort of, through like conversations like this and stories out there, they're able to realize how important that is.
And just let go of things that just don't serve you and harm your mental well-being.
You're preaching to the choir. You've mentioned that dancing is something that you enjoy doing. What are your go-to dance songs?
Ooh, I was not prepared. But let me see. Oh, wow. Burna Boy and Beyoncé must be up there. Like, I listen to both of them maybe every day. So yeah, I want to say African Giant.
Great album.
Great album. And maybe Love and Talk, Beyonce, might be my two go-to tracks for like a nice.
But then again, Beyonce has like some of the best dance songs.
Yes, no Beyonce slander allowed.
Yeah, so. You know, like, you wouldn't be someone that I would bring Beyonce slander to. Just because I understand the love that you have for her. And the beehive really stings. But like, Beyonce's catalogue is almost next to none. So I wouldn't slander her for her music. Yeah.
Yeah.
We can agree when it comes to that. But yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
We had briefly touched on your podcast. So At the Table podcast, it centers women, wellness, self-care, and you share uplifting, informative, inspiring conversations and good music. You've briefly touched on how you got there, but just tell me about how it all started and why it was important for you to create this space.
So basically, it started from the need of creating safe spaces for women who look like me. I was really involved in like academic politics. I was like, what is it, cos rep in my a gender studies program, and I got really involved in the politics of everything, and the nitty gritties of like the different experiences the Black students were having in comparison to the other students, and like how much more difficult it was for them. And then I also got to network in with like the Black minority ethnic BME society, right? And there I got to speak to other Black women who were going through the same, just in different fields of academia. And so it was incredibly striking to me to like be able to relate so deeply with other people, especially people who look like me, right? And then it was just saddening that there's not many places that we can have these conversations, you know, there's not much space for it in the classroom because not everybody can understand what you're feeling or what you're going through. Not everybody is bothered by the fact that the syllabus has no Black woman in it, or, you know, not everybody like and has to practice self-care in the same extent as myself, a Black woman, would have to, right? So long story short, I felt the need for a space to document conversations that I had with my friends, especially women of color. And so the first one was called Politicizing Self-Care, and that was basically a reflection of where I was at the time before graduating and finishing my MA.
I remember a couple of people that I studied with as well that attempted on creating spaces that were very similar to what you just described. And it wasn't something that was easy. And I remember being course rep during like my bachelor's degree and my master's degree. And it's just like having to continuously like not only advocate for yourself, but also advocate for people who are at intersections as well, but like from like a different ethnicity, you know, and sort of seeing what the similarities are, you know, when it comes to different races and what the differences are, and having to sort of weigh that and then be like, wow, like we're all going through it in such different ways. But then really the ones that are going through it the most are Black students. And if it's not all Black students, then it's definitely Black female students. And it was always something that was quite tricky for me to navigate, just because, I mean, a lot of white professors don't want to be hearing that, you know? So it was an uphill battle for sure, but we got some things done, which I'm always really proud of. So what has this journey taught you about yourself? And were there any moments where you were just like, you looked at yourself and you're like, wow, like, I actually really did this?
I have those moments when people connect with my podcasts, and I randomly have like young women being like, I really resonated with that, and I'm so glad you're doing what you're doing, or, you know, such moments like bring me so much joy. And also seeing other people like yourself doing podcasts too now, and and what did it teach me about myself, this journey? Ooh, that's a hard one. That I love to create. I feel like I feel at my best when I'm creating things and helping other people. So I love to create, basically. I feel like I'm a creator of sorts, but I don't really identify as one, but I like to create things. Yeah.
That's actually quite funny. Because I would definitely say that you're someone that creates. Yeah, like I would identify you as someone under the creative umbrella. But there's a quote that actually I really love, and it's been a huge part of my life. And while I was preparing for this episode, I found that it means quite a bit to you as well. So I'm going to just read it, and then you can tell me about what your initial reaction was when you first heard it and what it means to you now. So, I write for young girls of color, she says, for girls who don't even exist yet, so that there is something there for them when they arrive. And that quote is by Ntozake Shangi from her 1975 choreo poem for colored girls who have considered suicide, When the Rainbow is Enough.
Ah, wow. Every time I hear that quote, I just want to cry. Like, I just pray and hope everything that I do basically in my life is for this purpose, to help young Black women breathe a little easier, feel seen, you know, have some representation and have some kind of blueprints to move through life, because it's not always accessible to them, you know. Yeah, so I absolutely love that quote, and I'm so happy you pulled it up. I had a friend on the podcast, and she told me all about Nsusake Shange, shared some of her poetry as well as her own poetry, and we talked about like what she did and, you know, how much she's left an impact in the world and etc, right? But that was the first time I would say I actually came across her. Yeah. So pretty recently.
You speak of young girls and like having a blueprint, and do you feel like growing up there was sort of a blueprint, or were you always searching for someone who like looked like you or someone that you resonated with, and that has sort of motivated what you do now in a way?
I feel like I grew up looking up to my mom, and she definitely created the blueprint, the way she moves through life, the leadership roles she takes on, the way she supports her community, and like the way she cares for her children and provides to them really like stuck with me and like shaped who I am as a woman. I'd say the only time I felt that like I really have no representation, no idea of who to look up to, was when I was in academia, like higher education, because then, you know, we were learning about like my undergrad degree. We were basically looking at like white philosophers, white thinkers, and like men especially. So the first time I came across bell hooks through like my feminist studies class, that completely changed the trajectory of my like academic experience. I remember being so stunned, and I did my dissertation on her, and then I went further to do an MA in gender studies, and it was from that one class where the teacher, who was an amazing white woman, and she, you know, she incorporated some bell hooks in the reading list. And yeah, that truly changed how my academic journey sort of progressed. And that kind of marks the first time I realized that, oh my God, I was not feeling seen before.
Yeah, you know? I totally understand that. It's not until you actually, because a lot of the time it just feels like a dullness or like a numbness, like you don't actually realize something's missing until it presents itself, and then you're like, oh wow, like where was this my entire life, you know? And what was it specifically about what bell hooks, her work, what was it about it that really resonated with you?
I want to say it was her idea on like finding belonging within academia, within theory, actually. So she said something about, you know, finding belonging within academia and how theory allowed women, Black women especially, to kind of be, you know, in a like spiritually, emotionally, holistically, just to exist. And so she used her work as a means to sort of create that space for women of color in particular, right? And I felt like she was speaking to us, you know, she wasn't speaking to like educate a white audience. She was speaking to women of color and telling them, listen, there's space for you within theory. Theory is a safe space. And yeah, that really stuck with me. And then I want to say as well, I came across Kimberly Crenshaw, who came up with the title, intersectionality, the title, the word. and at the time, it just, you know, it, like everybody else's experience, it was a huge term that sort of made so much sense with everything going on in the world. So I wrote my dissertation on intersectionality with a key focus on bell hooks. Yeah, they were different, but I somehow merged the two.
I actually really want to read that at some point. But you said that there was this idea of women of color being able to exist fully within theory. So do you sometimes feel that in the real world there isn't space, or it isn't safe for women of color, or Black women in particular, for us to exist as our full selves?
You know what? I feel like the older I get, the more I'm cultivating these spaces for myself. Like, I don't just go into a white hairdresser and I'm like, can you make my hair? I know better. Or I don't, like, go to church and shy away from conversations on race or, you know, my experiences. When the time comes, I'm all about speaking about it, you know. Or I don't go to, like, I'm basically curating these spaces for myself through friendships, through community, and just taking my whole self within it, you know. I'm not leaving anything behind, and I'm sort of embracing all the parts of myself. So I think to answer your question, I feel like I only became aware of how there's not many spaces for me when I started creating these spaces more intentionally. And now I'm sort of curating a life that allows me to be around these spaces that allow me to be me and wholly myself.
Yeah, I totally,
you know,
get that. And I think that it's something that the older you get, you just sort of learn about these things and you gain the wisdom to be able to not only create these spaces, but also just like build the confidence to be able to do such, you know. And but when it comes to finding your voice and not being or not shying away from speaking up about certain issues, let it be race or whatever else it may be, what advice would you give to maybe someone who maybe isn't as confident or is a bit younger on how to find their voice and how to speak up for themselves, really?
I feel like a good starting point would be to read Black women or read works by people who look like you, because chances are they've experienced what you're going through. So that's a good place to start. And then get to know yourself better. And the more you do that, the more you know, this isn't for me, and this is for me, this is not good for my mental health, etc. So yeah, that would be my advice. Do some soul searching, get to know what you like, get to know what you don't like, and what you can tolerate, etc.
If you had to recommend three books that everyone should read, what would those three books be?
Fresh Water by Akwaeke Emezi. I'm still getting through Beloved, but I feel like it's an essential read by Toni Morrison. And the third one is a poetry book that I absolutely love. And it is called, it's by Dion Brand, and it's called The Blue Clerk. And I'm really enjoying that. So if you're into poetry, I would also recommend that. But everybody should first of all read Fresh Water.
I haven't read Fresh Water. Yeah, so I need to get on that. So when was your first sort of encounter with poetry? Because you're an avid poetry reader and lover. I don't know if you write poetry.
I used to, like, on the low with one of my best friends when we're in the train. Uh-huh. We would, like, write poetry on the train, and, like, we would go to some poetry events, and I never got to performing. But that's something I would love to do one day. And yeah, so I haven't been writing, but I did go through a phase where I used to, like, do some poetry in my notebook, or like when I'm on a train waiting to get somewhere. But like more recently, it's just been consuming a lot of poetry. And the first, time I came across poetry, so I've always loved hip-hop, and I feel like it stemmed from that, from my passion for words and like flow and like, you know, And I came across hip-hop from my big brother. When we were growing up, he would listen to tons of hip-hop. So I sort of grew up with that. And that kind of opened my way to finding poets. And, like, you know, I found an amazing community on Twitter that shares a lot of poetry. So I'm still learning a lot and discovering some really great writers.
Right now, yeah. I'm less of a hip-hop head, but I've definitely been a hip-hop head at some point in my life. So that right there makes me love you as a person even more, because I think that that's actually what got me into, like, doing spoken word, like, when I was younger, and, like, just my love of playing around with words and stringing sentences together, and just, yeah, it just fills my heart with so much joy. What are some of the hip-hop artists that have had the most significant effect on you?
Wow. Okay. So I want to say, oh my God, the list is endless. Different stages of my life, I've been relating to different hip hop artists. So in the last 2 years, I want to say No Name and Little Sims. Before that, and maybe always, I want to say like Mos Def and Jay-Z and Talib Kweli. Who else am I forgetting? The Roots, you know. Yeah, so I'm gonna leave it at that, and if I remember anybody else, I will share with you. But so far, I think those are like my top five, let's say.
That's a very interesting top five. Very unconventional, except for like maybe Jay-Z. But yeah, no, I really like that list. I have a feeling that after I start speaking about this next topic, you might remember somebody. This wouldn't have been a conversation about, like, you know, uplifting each other and general positivity and Black women if I didn't ask you what you thought about Erykah Badu and Jill Scott's Verses live.
Nice way to put that in here. Yes. So I was really there for how they were supporting each other. It was less a versus and more like a kind of, you know, bringing out the best of each other. Being like, yeah, I love that track. It was dope. And you played this one. Oh my God, that was amazing. I wrote that for you. And it was the first time I performed it. They just had such good chemistry. And like such a supportive, like, energy they created. So yeah, I really love it. And I listen to Jill Scott when I'm looking for some like joyful music. And Erykah Badu has just always been a voice in my life. Yeah, and I relate to her songs in different ways the older I get. Also, you were right, Lauryn Hill is another one. I've grown up listening to her music, and same as with Badu, the older I get, the more I relate to it in different ways. And I'm conscious of, like, you know, like certain things I don't like about them that they speak about. But even that, still, I'm able to, like, still enjoy their music and just relate to it in different
ways. Yeah, I understand that. I think that as I've gotten older, there's definitely certain artists that I relate to their music a lot more than I did, you know, when I was younger. You know, like, a Lauryn Hill has always been present in my life throughout it, and I've always been listening to her music, but it's not until, like, you know, the past maybe like 5 years where I'm just like, oh, okay, so this is what that is, right? I feel like there's certain artists that from a very young age, I just found very, very weird, but like in an interesting way, just how they sort of present themselves and how they go about doing what they do. Because like growing up, there was a lot of hip hop, there was a lot of R&B, and like it was also like the bubblegum pop stage. So like the NSYNCs and the Britney Spears and the Spice Girls and all of that. So it was like, I remember the first time that I ever saw Missy Elliott in a music video, and it was like the craziest thing to me. And I was just like, but she looks like nobody else, and this is so cool. Like, it just, I have goosebumps right now. Like, that's how much I absolutely love Missy Elliott. But so there are certain artists that like just intrigued me because they were so different. Coolio was one of them. Erykah Badu was one. Missy Elliott was definitely one. I think Eminem was one, just because there was nobody else that looked like him that was rapping like him. So yeah, I definitely understand growing older and sort of being like, I get this. I wanted to ask you, at what point did you sort of, or has there been a point where you've sort of wanted to create spaces here in Nairobi, similar to how you've done with At The Table podcast?
Yes, I had a moment where I was working with the startup in Nairobi, and like we were working basically targeting women in Nairobi. That was a target audience, right? And I hosted a few events while I was there, but I didn't get around to doing like a podcast sort of live recording, which is something I really want to do. So yeah, it's something that I really want to do when I come back and sort of expand my podcast to be like a visual, like a in-studio recording with live members. And yeah,
I can totally see you doing something like that. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. We can absolutely like do a co-hosting show where we get
Well, you know, that'd be
awesome.
Yeah. No, that would actually be a really cool idea.
Yes. Okay, but we'll keep that in mind.
When it comes to sort of building sisterhoods and communities, what are the sort of things that you value? And what have you learned about the importance of those relationships?
I feel like that's something I've learned a lot about in the last few years. The older I get, just how important these sisterhoods are, you know, in the different forms they present themselves in. And it can be somebody that you just don't speak to every day, but when you connect, their energy uplifts you, or like they teach you something new, or like they allow you to shine, and you do the same for them. So you leave feeling really full and like full of like light and energy and encouragement. And then there's the friendships where they're your go-to person when you're having a hard mental health day or just struggling in some way. And I call those friends of the mind. So friends who basically are there to, like, you know, change the voices in your head or, like, sort of help you get through dark periods, yeah? And then there's friends who you just go out and you have a good time with, and I appreciate them too. So I have learned a lot about sisterhood, like growing up, and it's something I'm watching my younger sister navigate now. And she's, you know, meeting all these different characters. Some people are not the best people to be your friend, and she's sort of moving through life trying to find her community. And I'm happy that she has me to look up to know that, like, you know, you can't ask for like good friendships. You do deserve them, and like they exist. You can have genuine sisterhoods of like positivity and just self-care and like community care, and all the good stuff that women can do with each other and for each other.
Yeah, I completely understand that, because I have a younger sister too, and those are conversations that we have. And I think that, you know, I don't know, I think it's in the past few years that I've had to learn it for myself with like my own like friendships and relationships, that what people, or what a lot of us, don't actually like realize and like properly internalize is the fact that people having access to your life is a privilege. It's not just something that just anybody can just like have that space in your heart, you know what I mean? And a lot of the time it's like, if you don't protect your space, then sometimes it can get, you can get yourself into like predicaments where you just feel so drained by relationships that are actually meant to be sort of like fueling you and filling you up, you know?
Wow, yes, I love that quote. People having access in your life is a privilege, 100%.
And I think that that also comes from understanding the importance of just what boundaries are. And so have there been times where you've not really felt comfortable setting boundaries, or you didn't know how to, and how did you sort of overcome that?
I feel like I'm naturally like, I find it hard to say no, and I could sometimes be like a people pleaser without even intending to be one.
Me too.
Yeah. And so like when I'm uncomfortable, it's easy for me to like just sit in my discomfort. And that's happened a lot of times. But like, I think the saving grace, so the good thing about all of this is the friends that I have now are like of good character, or they're people who I trust that are not like, you know, they don't have bad intentions, right? So I'm able to be like a yes man in such safe spaces because I trust them. And how did I get to this point? I feel like it became about me choosing the people I want to surround myself with, because I just know how hard it is for me to say no or to disappoint people. So I had to be very conscious about who I'm surrounding myself with and who I'm sharing access to myself with, and you know, and yeah, some doors had to be closed, and I'm learning that that's fine. Relationships with lovers, with friends, etc.
I completely understand what that journey feels like, and I can relate. And sometimes, you know, sometimes you have this idea in your head that like things will sort of like stay the same forever. But really the natural progression of life is that things do change. And even some people that you thought would never, you know, not be in your life, suddenly are not in your life. And that doesn't always have to be a bad thing. You know, sometimes there are spaces made for like bigger and better things.
Yes, absolutely. Let them run their course, let them do what they came to teach you, and then let go.
Yeah, 100%. You welcome things as they happen in life, and you let them be what they are, not what you want them to be. And that way, I think that like life sort of flows a bit easier.
Wow, that was great.
We're out here being poetic.
I'm telling you.
That's actually literally what happens every time we come together. What is a piece of advice that you would give the younger you if you could?
Oh, man. You have everything you need inside.
I say that all the time.
I think. Yes, it's so important to hear. And you're valuable. You're worth all of these things that you want and you desire. And it's out there for you because God is for you.
I totally agree with that. I always feel very, like, sort of enlightened after we speak, because, like, you definitely read a lot more than I currently do. And it's also like you sort of view the world in a very similar way to the way that I do. And it's always like from a very introspective position. And you have a very sort of strong connection to God as well, which is something we relate on as well. And so, yeah, I'm actually so happy that we got to do this and have this chat. And I'm so grateful for you coming on and joining me.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. That was amazing.
Yeah.
I'm so honored. Thanks for having me. And I can't wait So you share this with the world.
It's going to be an exciting episode. And I feel like it's going to be an episode that people will be able to learn some things and gain some insight. And I want you all to check out these podcasts, At the Table podcast. I'm going to put all of the links in the description somewhere. And her podcast comes every single Sunday, I believe. And so you guys should check out all of the amazing conversations that she has with some incredible people on there every single week. It's At the Table podcast. It's hosted by V. Kimani. And yeah, I hope that wherever you guys are listening from, that you're having an absolutely blissful day, and sending you all lots of light and lots of love. Bye, guys.
Thank you.